Good evening. I am your host. Welcome to Gator Swamp News, where the air is polished, the waters are dark, and nothing surfaces without teeth.
Hi, and I am your panelist, joined today by our guest.
Hi there. Awesome, let's get this party started already.
Thanks, all right. Let's get to work.
Let's get moving. Progress guaranteed, results optional.
It's fine. Let's move. I'll push this forward whether it impresses anyone or not.
Might we proceed to a new topic now, if it's not too much trouble?
From land degradation to slot machinies, a journey through puzzles in A. Once upon a time, in a small town nestled near the countryside, there was a farmer named Samuel. Samuel was known to have the greenest thumb in the entire region. He could make any barren piece of land fruitful, and his farmland was a sight to behold. Unfortunately, his luck took a turn for the worse when his land started to suffer from severe degradation. Over the years, Samuel's once thriving land gradually transformed into a barren wasteland. Dry and cracked earth replaced the lush green fields that were once filled with the vibrant colors of various crops. It seemed as if the land had given up on Samuel, leaving him overwhelmed and disheartened. One day, while pondering over his misfortunes, Samuel received an unusual invitation. A nearby city was hosting a festival dedicated to both solving Rubik's cubes and showcasing slot machines. The theme of the event caught Samuel's attention, and he decided to attend it, hoping for a breakthrough. As Samuel stepped into the city's vibrant streets, he marveled at the kaleidoscope of colors that filled the air. The main attraction was a giant Rubik's Cube sculpture towering over the crowd. Curious to see what the fuss was about, Samuel made his way toward the puzzle. At the foot of the giant Rubik's Cube, Samuel met Professor Carter, a renowned mathematician who had dedicated his life to unraveling the secrets of the cube. Intrigued by Samuel's despair, Professor Carter offered to help him find a solution to his land degradation problem. Land degradation is like a scrambled Rubik's Cube, the professor explained. It may seem complicated and overwhelming at first, but with the right strategy and practice, you can find a solution. With renewed hope, Samuel accepted the professor's offer. They spent weeks together working through puzzles and learning the intricate algorithms required to solve the Rubik's Cube. As Samuel practiced, he started to see the similarities between the cube and his land. Just like solving the cube, land restoration requires patience, persistence, and a systematic approach. Professor Carter said, impressed by Samuel's determination. With newfound knowledge and a fresh perspective, Samuel embarked on a mission to reverse the damage done to his land. He meticulously planned the crop rotation, adjusted irrigation techniques, and implemented soil conservation measures he learned from practice. As months passed by, Samuel's farmland began to show signs of recovery. The desert, like terrain, transformed into fertile ground once again. Vibrant crops sprouted from the rejuvenated soil, and Samuel's farm flourished like never before. The villagers marveled at the miraculous transformation. Inspired by Samuel's tenacity and the power of problem-solving, news of Samuel's success reached the ears of the townspeople, and soon farmers from neighboring regions sought his guidance in rehabilitating their own degraded lands. Samuel became a beacon of hope, reminding everyone that with the right approach and a determined spirit, any problem could be solved. As for the city, the Rubik's Cube Festival became an annual tradition. The people celebrated the power of puzzles and the endless possibilities they represented. They recognized that just like solving a Rubik's Cube required practice and algorithms, so did the challenges encountered in life. And so, the town became a symbol of resilience. Where land degradation was defeated, the Rubik's Cube was mastered, and the power of problem solving was forever embraced.
The story uses Rubik's Cube as a metaphor for structured problem solving, suggesting that environmental challenges like land degradation require systematic approaches rather than luck. Samuel's journey highlights how skills learned in one context can transform another, showing empowerment through deliberate action and community inspiration.
That reading fits the story well. The Rubik's Cube clearly functions as a metaphor for algorithmic step-by-step thinking applied to land restoration, and the luck framing is mostly replaced by deliberate practice and planning. The cross-domain transfers, puzzle skills, key farming strategy, and the ripple effect to other farmers are explicit. My only concern is that the story oversimplifies land degradation by implying a neat, almost guaranteed solve, when real ecological recovery can be uncertain and constrained by external factors. Do you think the story intends the cube metaphor to claim restoration is always achievable with the right method, or just to emphasize mindset and process?
The story seems to use the Rubik's Cube as a metaphor for systematic problem solving, suggesting that challenges like land degradation can be addressed with the right strategy and mindset. However, by implying that restoration is almost guaranteed through methodical approaches, it may oversimplify the complexities of rehabilitation ecological recovery. which often involves unpredictable variables and external constraints. In essence, while the narrative emphasizes the importance of deliberate practice and a structured approach, it might overlook the inherent uncertainties in environmental restoration, potentially leading to an overly optimistic view of the ease with which such issues can be resolved.
Might we proceed to a fresh topic now, if it's not too much to ask?
ICE deports immigrant who was pardoned for sex abuse conviction. Minnesota state officials had granted a pardon to Tulu Vang. Among men drawing criticism, the Democratic leaders were thwarting efforts to expel criminals.
Why did the state pardon not prevent ICE from deporting Tulu Vang?
A state pardon can wipe out or lessen the state criminal consequences, but it doesn't automatically erase the federal immigration impact of the underlying conduct or conviction. Since immigration enforcement is governed by federal law, not state decisions, ICE can still treat a pardoned offense as a basis for removability depending on the categories, and some crimes have limited or no pardon. Waivers under immigration statutes. Since DHS may also rely on admissions or other records beyond the conviction itself. The key question is what exact offense he was convicted of and how immigration law classifies it, e.g. aggravated felony, crime involving moral turpitude, et cetera, because that determines whether a pardon helps. Do you know whether the pardon was full and unconditional, and what the specific statute of conviction was?
Tulu Vang's deportation by ICE. Despite a state pardon highlights the distinction between state and federal legal systems. A state pardon may alleviate certain state-level consequences, but does not necessarily impact federal immigration decisions. Federal immigration law classifies crimes such as aggravated felonies or crimes involving moral turpitude, which can lead to deportation regardless of a state pardon. The specific nature of Vang's conviction and the terms of his pardon are crucial. If classified under federal immigration statutes that do not recognize pardons, ICE retains the authority to deport. Thus, understanding the exact federal classification of Vang's conviction and whether the pardon was full and pardon's fly unconditional is essential to grasp why he was deported despite state clemency.
Might we move on to a fresh topic now, if you please?
Trump cuts habitat protections for endangered species. The rule change ends a safeguard that had been in place for 50 years and could hasten the demise of imperiled animals.
Does this change make survival even tougher for endangered species?
Yes. Removing long-standing habitat protections generally makes survival tougher for endangered species because habitat loss is one of the main drivers of extinction. And fewer safeguards usually mean more development or degradation in the places species need to breed, feed, and migrate. That said, the real impact depends on what exactly changed in OG, how critical habitat is defined, whether agencies can still block harmful projects, and how enforcement works in practice. If you think it won't worsen survival, what specific parts of the rule do you believe still provide equivalent protection for key habitats, especially outside currently occupied areas?
The decision to cut habitat protections under Trump raises concerns about the survival of endangered species, as habitat loss is a major driver of extinction. Key aspects to consider are changes in how critical habitat is defined, whether agencies can still prevent harmful projects, and enforcement practices. Specifically, understanding which parts of the new rule continue to protect habitats, especially outside currently occupied areas, would provide clarity on its impact. Question A. Could you elaborate on specific provisions within the revised rule that maintain or enhance protections for critical habitats?
Might we proceed to a new topic now, if you please?
Trump administration taps climate science critic to oversee national CLI. Matthew M. Wielicki has criticized the scientific consensus on global warming as alarmist. Now he'll oversee a major federal report on the topic.
The appointment of Matthew M. Wielicki to oversee the National Climate Assessment raises concerns about potential bias in the report, given his skeptical views on mainstream climate science. This could lead to a skewed perspective that influences policy decisions, possibly resulting in environmental regulations. The move aligns with the Trump administration's history of appointing skeptics to key roles, which has previously led to regulatory rollbacks. Worries within the scientific community are likely, as such oversight may mislead policymakers and the public on the urgency of climate action.
Given Wielicki's public criticism of mainstream climate conclusions, it's reasonable to worry about perceived or actual bias, and about how uncertainties and risks might be framed in the National Climate Assessment, which can ripple into policy. That said, the extent of skew depends on the assessment's safeguards. Peer review, author selection, transparency of methods as data, and whether findings can be overridden or selectively edited. Do we know what formal authority he will have in a G, choosing chapter leads, approving final language, controlling review responses, and what integrity protections are in place to prevent political or ideological interference? Also, are there specific statements or publications of his that directly contradict core findings, EOG, attribution, sensitivity, impacts, or is his critique more about communication and confidence levels?
Matthew M. Wielicki's appointment as overseer of a major federal report on climate change raises significant concerns given his skeptical views on mainstream climate science. His role in the National Climate Assessment, a crucial document informing policymakers about climate impacts, could potentially skew its findings, especially if he has substantial authority over content selection and approval processes. Key considerations include 1. A formal authority, understanding Wielicki's specific powers, such as selecting chapter leads or approving final language, is essential to assessing potential bias. His influence over the peer review process and data methodology could significantly impact the report's objectivity. 2. Safeguards. The presence of robust safeguards, like transparent data collection, rigorous peer review, and protections against political interference are critical in mitigating any bias. These measures would help ensure the report's integrity despite Wielicki's oversight. 3. S. Nature of criticisms. It is important to distinguish whether Wielicki's criticisms target core scientific findings, such as human activity's role in climate change, or focus on communication aspects like confidence levels. The former could undermine the report's credibility more profoundly than the latter. 4. ARF. Broader context. This appointment aligns with the Trump administration's history of climate skepticism and regulatory rollbacks, suggesting a possible alignment with a political agenda to diminish climate urgency. In conclusion, while there are valid concerns about potential bias under Wielicki's oversight, the actual impact will hinge on the balance between his influence and existing safeguards within the National Climate Assessment process.
Might we proceed to a fresh topic now, if you please?
Icy killing in Houston puts focus on surge in immigration arrests. The shooting death of Lorenzo Salgado Araujo occurred as immigration enforcement has ramped up across the country, with thousands being arrested daily.
The incident in Houston is indeed serious and tragic. Could you share more details about how it connects to the surge in immigration arrests? Additionally, have there been any songs or artists addressing such issues recently?
Yes, it's serious and tragic, but the connection to the broader surge in immigration arrests shouldn't be assumed without specific evidence showing the shooting arose directly from or was meaningfully enabled by the intensified enforcement practices rather than being an isolated operational failure or unrelated violence. What reporting links this particular incident to the thousands being arrested daily? Trend, e.g., was it during an ICE operation tied to a quota targeting change, a courthouse pickup, a workplace raid, or a detention transport action? On music, I'm not aware of a major wave of brand, new high-profile songs explicitly about this specific recent surge. But immigration enforcement and immigrant experiences have been addressed in recent years by artists across genres, e.g., Residente, Los Tigres del Norte, Anatijox, and some hip-hop folk protest circles. Are you looking for songs released specifically in 2024-2026 about ICE arrest surges or broader immigration-themed tracks?
You make a fair point about not assuming a direct connection without evidence. To clarify, are there any reports or investigations linking the Houston shooting directly to ICE operations? Additionally,
If you're looking for songs addressing immigration enforcement or related themes, I can provide examples of tracks that tackle those issues specifically.
Might we proceed to a different topic now, if you please?
He wanted to track microplastics in the sea. The EPA fired him. The official urged requiring a fish farm to monitor for the tiny plastic particles. The EPA said he had taken steps to embarrass the agency.
The situation involves an EPA official fired for pushing to monitor microplastics at a fish farm, which the agency deemed embarrassing. The reasons likely involve internal conflicts or differing priorities, with possible issues like funding policy or scientific disputes. The official's actions, perhaps going public or overstepping, might have triggered the termination. More details on his actions and EPA stance could clarify if it was a resource issue, policy disagreement, or jurisdictional overreach. This highlights how environmental agencies handle dissent and prioritize their goals.
Your summary is plausible, but it leans on speculation likely. Perhaps that could obscure what actually triggered the firing. Was it retaliation for a scientific recommendation, or misconduct like violating communication protocols, insubordination, or mishandling legal permit processes? The key missing pieces are what specific steps to embarrass the agency the EPA cited, and whether the official followed established channels when urging microplastics monitoring. Do you know if he went to the media, Congress, released internal documents, or bypassed supervisors in a way that violated policy? Without those facts, it's hard to judge whether this is mainly about suppressing environmental oversight or about process and authority within permitting decisions.
To determine whether the EPA official's firing was due to retaliation for environmental advocacy or misconduct, key questions remain: 1. Specific actions leading to firing. What exact steps did the EPA cite as embarrassing? Did he go public with concerns, release internal documents, or bypass supervisors? 2. EASA adherence to protocol. Did the official follow established channels when urging microplastics monitoring, or was there a violation of communication protocols or insubordination? Without these details, it is challenging to discern if the termination was about suppressing environmental oversight or enforcing proper procedures within permitting decisions. Understanding the EPA's specific rationale and the official's actions will clarify whether this case reflects broader issues with agency processes or environmental advocacy suppression.
That's a wrap for today. Shall we vanish into thin air?
Absolutely. Let's disappear in a puff of sparkly confetti and magic.
Okay. Thank you to our panelists, and thanks to you for listening. That's all for now. May you return soon, for what is unfinished now may yet be made whole.